This is Masters of Dispute Resolution on podclips.io. Masters of Dispute Resolution is designed to provide those involved in the mediation process with the views and insights of the most experienced and accomplished mediators in the profession. We'll share the stories of conflict and lessons learned from mediating challenging and intriguing disputes. You'll hear stories about how conflict affected the lives of those involved in the conflict and how resolution of disputes through mediation provided them with the ability to move forward unburdened by an ongoing dispute. Through our discussions, you will gain insight in how to address and overcome difficult issues and achieve more satisfying results in mediation, whether you're a mediator, attorney, or have been or contemplate being involved in mediation. Your host is Len Levy, mediator and arbiter with ADR Services, Inc., a leading alternative dispute resolution provider. Len litigated complex cases for more than 30 years and has been a mediator since 1998, joining ADR Services on its panel of neutrals in 2008. He has been recognized as a super lawyer in alternative dispute resolution beginning in 2014. And now your host, Len Levy.
Thank you, Daryl. Welcome, everyone, and thank you for joining us for season 5 of Masters of Dispute Resolution, a podcast which will add tools to your mediation toolbox. We are brought to you by ADR Services, Inc. and the American Institute of Mediation. In each podcast episode, you will hear and have been hearing a story about conflict, the impact the conflict had on the lives of the parties involved, how resolution was reached, and the lessons to be taken from the conflict and its resolution. Now, many of the details of the story you're about to hear have been modified to preserve the confidentiality essential to mediation while also conveying the essence of the conflict and its resolution. Now, today we are going to be joined by Irene Takahashi, who is an incredible mediator with a very interesting and varied background. Irene has become known as one of the Bay Area's leading mediators and is a member of the ADR Services panel. She has extensive trial experience and also has served as a trial judge and brings those tools and perspectives to the mediations that she conducts. She has a wide range of experience in civil disputes of all types, personal injury, employment, landlord-tenant, public and private entity liability, and others. And beyond all of that, her widely recognized legal acumen, Irene has developed a deserved reputation for being able to identify and facilitate the resolution of complex personal concerns that often form the most formidable barriers to settlements. And we're going to be hearing about some of those today. But just a quote from one of the attorneys who's used Irene, Irene's perceptive instincts made the difference. And so we're going to hear today about a story that is a wrongful death case involving a left-turning vehicle and a motorcycle. And Irene is going to convey that. And thank you for joining us, Irene.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, so what happened?
Well, I'd like to start, if you don't mind, by just introducing you to some of the players involved and then jumping right into the facts.
Sure.
Okay. Well, first of all, this was a case that was brought to me about 2 weeks before trial and a few days before expert disclosure. Both of the attorneys are very experienced trial attorneys, and I was honored to be asked to try to mediate this case. The plaintiff was the wife of a decedent. She was about 60, very successful, a businesswoman in her own right. Her husband, the decedent, he had been married for more than 30 years. He was a motorcycle mechanic and loved to cook and ride his motorcycle and fix things around the house. And interestingly, she made almost three times more money than he, but that's sort of an aside. The defendant was a 60-year-old woman. Interestingly, all the parties or people involved were about 60 years old. But the defendant was a divorced, currently unemployed woman that lived on a 23-acre property, which she was a co-tenant with her former husband. And this accident occurred about 3 years ago when the defendant was driving her Jeep home. She lived in an unincorporated area of Alameda County where there's a lot of open space and two-lane roads. She was approaching her home and the driveway to her home and knew that she had to turn left across a two-lane road. She was on her cell phone and she was looking at her grandchildren playing in front of her home. She started to make her left turn and admitted in deposition that she was still looking at her grandchildren when she felt a horrific crash to the right front corner of her vehicle. It was decedent who had been riding his motorcycle down that country road toward her and found himself confronted with a vehicle turning left in front of him. She wasn't sure what had happened. She heard a terrific noise. She opened her car door, looked down on the road, and saw the face of decedent, motionless, lifeless.
Oh boy.
That's sort of how the whole thing started.
What was her reaction to that? And how did that impact her initially?
You know, it was very difficult to tell by the time of the mediation. Quite frankly, it was my impression that defense counsel had done such a great job in securing such a good expert that the defendant, rather than at least appearing at mediation to be overcome with remorse and/or guilt, was rather defiant and was telling me, well, this wouldn't have happened if he hadn't been speeding.
Okay.
So that was a bit of a challenge. I'm not quite used to seeing that, but I think defense counsel did a marvelous job, and that was part of the liability argument, as a matter of fact.
All right.
The CHP had done their preliminary investigation and determined that the defendant was driving her Jeep about 37 miles an hour, 5 seconds before impact, and that she was slowing to go into her driveway. And about 2.6 seconds before impact, she started her left turn. Quite frankly, this mediation and the issues resolving it had something to do with liability and the anticipated battle of experts. But quite frankly, it was the financial posture that the defense found itself in because their insured did have what would normally be a healthy policy of $250,000. But this was a wrongful death case, and the demand was $2 million.
Okay.
The focus then became, well, what about property, other assets? And it turned out that this woman's property, which she was co-tenant with her ex-husband, was worth, I believe, in excess of $2.8 million. Normally, that would not be an issue. Just sell off a piece of property. It might take some finagling, but you would be able to satisfy a judgment at least enough to start talking about settlement. But what we soon learned was this property was encumbered by liens, and with a homestead exemption, quite frankly, even if plaintiff secured a judgment of $2 million, there'd be no way to collect it.
Okay, so let me just kind of back up just a little bit. So we've got a demand of $2 million, and very often as mediators, we look at, okay, so what's driving this demand? Is this something that the plaintiff herself has expectations for? If so, where did those expectations come from? So who was driving the bus, so to speak?
Well, I couldn't tell. I knew this plaintiff's counsel from years before, quite frankly, I'd actually gone to trial against him. And I knew him to be a decent, honest, and hardworking, very talented attorney. This woman as I mentioned before, was a successful businesswoman. And the reason I mentioned that she made two or three times more than her husband is kind of interesting, I thought, because they kept separate bank accounts. Quite frankly, it came up out of the mouth of her attorney. It's not about money. And the defense counsel, quite frankly, chuckled and said, when they say it's not about money, it really is about money. So I guess that's the best answer I can give you at this time, Lynn.
Okay. Well, sometimes we're trying to be mind readers, and that's a skill that I don't know. It's a real crapshoot when you try to do that from time to time. So you've got a demand that seems to be, at least perceived to be, within the ballpark of possible verdicts. This is not pie in the sky kind of demands, right?
I would agree with that. Yes.
Okay. So when you see a situation like this, before you go into mediation, do you have pre-mediation call with the attorneys, or how do you pro I know there was a time frame. I think you said the trial was in a few weeks, so
Yes.
there wasn't a lot of time to do things that you might normally do. But in this case, did you speak to counsel before the mediation session?
Yes, as a matter of fact, when I was checking my calendar and saw the case coming up, wanted to see what kind of case, immediately saw it was a wrongful death, and I was quite frankly surprised that people were going to do this on Zoom. I really felt that I could be much more effective if this was in person. And fortunately, in this case, both counsel were in the San Francisco Bay Area and were able to come to our offices in Oakland and accommodate my desire. As you can imagine, the hesitancy on the part of the plaintiff's counsel was that he did not want his client to even see the defendant. He thought that there would be an emotional breakdown. And so that was an easy fix that we could arrange for arrival times, staggered. And then I really wanted to spend a lot of time with plaintiff personally, one-on-one, before the defense even got there. But I was very happy that after a relatively short period of time, plaintiff's counsel got back to me and said that his client was willing to come in. I thought, for a wrongful death case, it was necessary. I would have traveled to them if it was difficult, for them to come into the office, but that was key, of course.
And your desire is driven by your feeling that making the connection face to face is more effective in many situations, and this being one of them, correct?
Absolutely. As you alluded to, my background is as a state and federal prosecutor and civil litigator. And I had a lot of trials. And I know that I'm most effective in front of a jury. I can connect with them. And I just knew, particularly since the decedent was a woman, I wanted her to know from the beginning that I was listening to her, that I was trying to understand her feelings, her motivations. Not only what had happened over the last almost 2.5 years since her husband's death, but how she was thinking about moving forward and how she'd been doing. And I just didn't think I could do that over Zoom.
That's the art form of mediation. What tools you want to pull out of the toolbox and how you want to apply them. And we're going to take a break right now and discover how you did apply those tools. I'm Len Levy. We're on Masters of Dispute Resolution, and my guest is Irene Takahashi.
Masters of Dispute Resolution would like to thank ADR Services Incorporated, your partner in resolution, and its founder, Lucy Barron, for supporting this podcast. ADR Services is one of the leading providers of alternative dispute resolution in California. Leveraging technology to drive resolution, ADR Services is committed to dynamism in the face of growing client need and an ever-evolving legal climate. Now operating offices in all major legal markets of California, ADR Services provides unparalleled in-person and remote resolution services through its exclusive panel, comprised of more than 130 of the most distinguished and talented neutrals across the state, capable of handling challenging and complex mediations, arbitration, and other procedures in every field of law. When you seek the services of a neutral and you want results and satisfied clients, contact ADR Services, www.adrservices.com.
Welcome back to Masters of Dispute Resolution. I'm Len Levy, and my guest is Irene Takahashi. And we have been talking about a mediation in a wrongful death case. And this is one that was in person. And Irene has conveyed very good reasons why this one needed to be in person. So we're going to talk about the events at the mediation. So you have everybody appearing in at the mediation. How did you set it up? What ground rules, if any, did you establish for these folks?
Well, as I started to say in the first segment there, we made sure that plaintiff, her attorney, and support person arrived. I think we did about 45 minutes before the defense did, and in totally separate areas of our offices with totally separate ways to get to restrooms. and so that was just sort of strategically. And also lunch breaks. And yeah, we just kind of policed the whole thing so there wouldn't be any awkward moments. Because that was made very, very clear that plaintiff counsel didn't want to see the defendant. And I should have known by reading the defense and plaintiff's brief that this was going to be a very emotionally charged, as they always are with wrongful death. But in reading plaintiff counsel's brief, he alluded to the fact that his client was willing to participate in the mediation reluctantly, didn't care what it cost to go to trial. And in his own words, made it clear to me that she was looking for revenge, that she wanted the defendant to suffer as she had suffered since her husband's passing and would be suffering for the rest of her life. And as soon as I walked into that room, I quite frankly was expecting someone to have a Kleenex box in her lap, and she didn't. Len, I've never seen anyone quite so angry, trembling, screeching, not so much tears, but fury. And it was a little unsettling, but I realized that it was important for me to let her vent and not interrupt her. And I just kind of wondered to myself, how many moments had she spent since his passing, releasing that kind of emotion. I had to let her, I had to kind of absorb it myself before I communicated to the folks in the other room what had been going on.
So you basically were validated in your call to say, you know, this really does need to be in person, because the anger seems to be the major impediment. You can't get past the anger, you're not going to have a rational assessment of risks and things of that nature, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. So you've got this very, very angry person. I've dealt with this kind of situation. Matter of fact, there is a book by Doug Knoll called Deescalate, which is how to get an angry person calmed down, I think, in 90 seconds. There's some very interesting stuff going on there. But in any event, in this particular case, the need to vent was apparent. Now, once she did vent, was she changed?
No. Not during that first session at all. No. It wasn't a matter of the when you use the word validate, I hesitate a little bit. It was just letting her express herself in her own way and being very, very careful not to appear patronizing, but to be more of a concerned person. I can't say friend, that would be disingenuous, but to hear the emotion and the words she chose to express what she wanted out of this litigation.
And what did she express that she wanted out of it?
She wanted the defendant to suffer. She didn't care if the defendant went into bankruptcy. She didn't care if the defendant spent the rest of her life worrying about her own rent, how she'd get food, or how she'd pay her bills. She didn't care.
And so the idea that this is something that she could get out of a mediation. Essentially, she wanted the defendant to have a voluntary life suicide on anything enjoyable in her future and do this voluntarily because
That's what it broke down to.
that is one of the toughest impediments to overcome. Now, did she think that she could attain all of that through trial? Was that her? Because that's the alternative. She's either going to settle this thing or go to trial. So did she come in with the idea of, I'll go through this, but I think we really need to have her just go through trial to maximize the suffering that is going to be inflicted through my efforts. Was that the attitude?
That was more or less her attitude, but at the same time, her attorney in, private conversations with me was indicating that, he'd be willing to cut his fees to make it work, because he sensed that going through a trial and getting a judgment that could not be paid by this particular defendant, even though the insurance company was willing to put up their $250,000 immediately, was going to get her that emotional relief. It was, and on the other side, of course, defense counsel and their claims person knew that $250,000 wasn't going to do it, and they couldn't abandon they're insured, and they're going to have to go through the expense and the whole trial and just hope to have some damage control.
Okay. So this really sets the scene in terms of attitude going in. So what did you do to help the plaintiff get past it? Now, recognizing, of course, that there's no assurance that your efforts are going to be effective in doing this. But what did you try?
Well, I tried to communicate the defendant's situation, understanding there would be very little sympathy on the part of the plaintiff. But I asked the plaintiff, I said, "Look, I want to just talk to you, person to person, woman to woman, and ask you if you've really thought through whether going through a trial will be healing to you going forward."
Very
I said, "You weren't there at the time of this horrible event, but if you go through a trial, you're going to be standing there watching it all happen, and you're going to have to listen to experts talking about speed. You're going to have to be questions about your personal relationship with your husband. But the most damaging thing I see is that you're going to have to almost watch it and live it. And I don't know if that's what you really want to do, whether it's worth it to you emotionally to get through this, because we all know that time heals. It was just so raw." But I said, "Have you really thought this through? Will it help you heal?
And what was her reaction to that inquiry?
She got quiet. She didn't say yes. She didn't say no. But when I would come back telling her what the defense was trying to do to put together some sort of resolution, and also the realities of this property being so encumbered, I just wanted her just kind of listen to the reality of the situation. Basically, I was working in the other room with the financial restructuring counsel that defendant had hired. Quite frankly, I felt that plaintiff's counsel and plaintiff were just not willing to even begin to work that through because the high level of emotion that was involved. I felt I was breaking through a little bit, but quite frankly, Lynn, after 4 hours, I did not feel that it was worth continuing that day because it got to the point where I can't remember whether one side or the other just refused to negotiate. So that's it. No, it's just not happening. It can't be done.
And you know something, very often we'll get feedback as mediators that, well, you weren't successful. You weren't successful. They didn't all agree. They didn't get, but the idea that I'm hearing from what you're saying is that the process had to have time to ferment, so to speak. I mean, it's just like you're ferment. You know, you had fermentation process here in terms of she the kind of attitude that of revenge had to be let go in order for there to be a resolution, but it may not happen in one session. It may not happen in many sessions. So when you recommended that the session be terminated, was there a contemplation of another session?
I was very hopeful, and of course, I offered it. There's a lot of pressure on both sides because they had expert witness disclosure in about 4 days. So counsel were quite willing to continue. But there's another thing that I told plaintiff before I called the session off, at least temporarily. And I can tell you about it now, or we can wait for the next session.
Well, you know something? That is a great lead-in to the next session. And we are going to take a break. I'm Len Levy, and I am chatting with Irene Takahashi. And this is Masters of Dispute Resolution. We'll be back.
Hi there. We hope you're enjoying another fascinating episode of Masters of Dispute Resolution. Has the show ever made you think about becoming a mediator and doing the work you're hearing these experts doing? Are you thinking about it right now? Imagine a career where you're working to help people in conflict find win-win solutions. The sense of purpose you'll feel can easily be heard in the voices of the guests on this show and its host, expert mediator Len Levy. Or maybe you're a mediator already looking to build your skill set in order to pull off some of the brilliant and out-of-the-box solutions that these guests are talking about. That's where we come in. We're the American Institute of Mediation, and we train mediators of all levels. We're the place you come to learn the basics of mediation or to raise your game in the field. We specialize in mediating commercial and litigated cases, but we teach the skills in such a way that will work in any setting. Our slogan is world-class training for the complete mediator because we feature the world's best mediation trainers and we prepare you for all aspects of being a professional mediator. Find us online at AmericanInstituteOfMediation.com and browse all of our courses that are available for streaming on demand. You can watch our courses at your convenience, at your desk, on a plane, or in bed in your jammies. We'll see you in the mediation world soon.
Welcome back to Masters of Dispute Resolution. I'm Lynn Levy, and Irene Takahashi is explaining to us what took place in a wrongful death mediation. Irene has conveyed about the emotional impediments that were present in this mediation. Now, what you conveyed, Irene, was that the plaintiff didn't quite exhibit a catharsis, you know, and there wasn't a perceptible change going into this. But you moved toward resolution. What do you have for us? How did you do it?
Sometimes I wonder. Well, you know, what I said before our break was that there was one other thing that I did mention, and this was, I felt really one-on-one. I was sitting right next to the plaintiff. I could have touched her. And I said, you know, I know you want the defendant to suffer as you have suffered and will continue to suffer. I said, just think about one thing. This woman driving her Jeep will be going in and out of her driveway for the rest of her life. And you know, and I know that she's going to be thinking about what happened. So I leave you with that there's something that will happen, whether there's a jury trial or not. No matter what the judgment is, no matter what the settlement, but I just leave you with that, and just want you to think about it. I think, Lynn, the key to this was stepping into the shoes of the plaintiff, and after hearing from her, trying to find a way to provide some sort of relief, and. Usually as mediators, at least I, when I'm talking to both sides, come from a position of what the jury would feel given the evidence. And in this case, it was all a toss-up. We didn't know what a jury would do, how much liability to me was fairly clear. But in this case, I think the key to resolving this was listening to the plaintiff, hearing the plaintiff, the emotional part, which is oftentimes what we attorneys and mediators forget, because we do so much in our past and it's just a case. But to these individuals that come to us, it's not just a case, and it's not a time for mediators to be disappointed because we can't change their perception in an hour or two.
Right.
And knowing when to back off, when you see that there's an impasse, and allowing some of the things that happened to hopefully sink in and cause people to change their attitude, was the key here.
You know, when we went through mediator training, most of us early on, we learned about active listening and reframing and things of that nature, which always, at least in those initial stages, seemed to be kind of a disingenuous expression. You know, what I hear you saying is, and. Basically, what you did, it seems, is to demonstrate just simply by saying, I understand that you're angry and that you want her to suffer, but your wanting her to suffer has nothing to do with the settlement necessarily, or the jury verdict, whether you settle it or whether a jury verdict happens, because there's this aspect of it that you may not have thought of, and that is the fact that the defendant was going to think every single time she turned into her driveway about this unpleasant episode in her life. So the ongoing suffering was built in, and getting a party to realize that their goal has already been achieved, and having nothing to do with
money.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Money wouldn't bring him back.
Right?
She knew it.
Years ago, I had a plaintiff who was injured, and that wasn't a serious accident, but what she did was she missed out on the ability to breastfeed her kid because she was 9 months pregnant when the accident occurred, and her back was so messed up that she couldn't hold the baby. And she was angry, and she couldn't get let go of that anger. And at the time, the only thing I had to offer her was, you don't want to put a value on it because you want to retain your anger. And you don't want to make that decision. This is what she didn't want to make the decision. She didn't want to put a value on it. But if the jury put the value on it, she said she could remain angry at them. So sometimes we think we can change people, and sometimes we can. Sometimes we can just change perspective. And the idea of changing that perspective, I think what you recognized when you said, we've had enough for today, was that the parties needed, and especially the plaintiff here, needed to process what had taken place, give the food for thought. And one thing we haven't covered here, the case resolved, didn't it?
It
How
did.
did it? Didn't resolve at that session. How did it resolve?
Well, I came away from the mediation probably as puzzled as what was going to happen next is everybody. And a day and a half later, I got a call from plaintiff's counsel, and he said, "My client has done some thinking and we're ready to resolve the case." I basically fell out of my chair. I was so surprised and so happy. He was happy too. I mean, I just have to remind everyone that this is someone's loved one. 3 years she's been living with this. It's pretty unrealistic for us to think, no matter how good we may think we are, that we can change people's attitudes in a mediation session. I think it's allowing, like you say, to sink in a little bit. And that's another reason why I wish people would come a little sooner to mediations than right before trial, because by that time, there's so much invested in every way that you can think of the meaning of that word, that it's hard to back off. And this was just in time, just in time.
Yeah, the balancing that it seems you had to engage in was there's the practical, what's going to happen at trial, what might not happen at trial, what are the possible results, things of that nature, and the emotional. And those are two separate things, and it's very often the difference that the party's emotional needs are met in order to resolve a case. So your approach to it was to provide kind of the catalyst. And sometimes that's all we can do is provide a catalyst for further reflection. One of the things that I always do, and I think you do as well, is if a case doesn't resolve, you follow up, right? I never consider a mediation over until I hear, yes, it's been resolved. So, what does the addressing of the emotional aspects of this case? What did you take away as a mediator in terms of how you approach mediation, how you approach expectations of what parties should do or might do?
I've been doing this mediation now for what, 8 or 9 years, and I found more and more as far as my approach, assuming plaintiff's counsel is willing to really engage the plaintiff. All too often, at least when I was starting to mediate, I saw plaintiffs standing on the sidelines, often saying, what happens if we don't settle? And I have focused more and more because I'm finding more mediations are coming to me at earlier and earlier stages rather than like when I used to mediate when it was right before trial, much like the case I've been whining about, right? But actually, I to really, what my takeaway is, to really pay attention to the plaintiff. It is their case. And if plaintiff counsel are willing to let me speak with the plaintiff, oftentimes they find out more about the human dynamics of the case. And I firmly believed, based on my trial experience, that jurors, for the most part, rule from their heart and they find facts to bolster that decision. Because to them, it's the first time they've heard about it. Litigators have been living with it for years, but it's the first time they hear everything. It's an impression. And no surprise, it's often an emotional reaction first, and then finding the facts in support.
You know, one of the things I think that attorneys can do to assist on this is to not just focus on, okay, we're going to go to trial. Here's the evidence. This is what I'm going to present. This is the likelihood of a jury finding this, that, or the other thing. Also, to try to get a feel for the client's needs. I can't even tell you how many times I hear plaintiff's attorneys say, well, I have client control. That phrase bothers me. I am sorry, but it does, because it's not. You're not trying to control the client. What you're trying to do, it seems to me, is advance the client's interests. Irene, thank you very much. We are at the end of our allotted time, and this has been such a pleasure. It's so wonderful to have been able to work with you on this. And I hope at some point we can have you back as a guest. That would be great. All right.
Thank you, Lynn. Thank you very much.
So, before we do break, if people want to contact you and schedule a mediation, how do you suggest they do that?
Well, frankly, they could call me directly. They could email directly. I have a case manager. I could give you all of that information. What would you like?
Well, let's start with the case manager,
Okay.
and just go with that. Who is your case manager?
Her name is Sydney Wright, and she can be contacted by this email, Sydney, Sydney, team, TEAM, one word, Sydney team at adrservices.com.
Thank you. And thank you, Daryl Wayne, engineer and producer. I'm your host, Len Levy, and this is Masters of Dispute Resolution on Podflips. .io powered by Infogen Labs, Inc. I hope you will continue to enjoy the stories we bring you. And in the meantime, stay well, keep listening, and remember, peace of mind is enhanced when conflicts are resolved.
If you wish to contact Len Levy, you can reach him through his email at lslevy@adrservices.com, through Len's website, lenlevymediate.com. Telephone him at 818-903-5562 or contact his case manager at ADR Services, 213-683-1600.